All right, you're back in the DFSR with an NBA podcast on the Overtime Media Network, broadcasting live from the Vivid Seats Lounge. I'm Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
And we are going to break down a four-game Thursday NBA slate here with some interesting games going on, some bad teams. Now, I have the coach of Cleveland, the name just escaped me for a second. Did you see this thing where he called the players thugs in a practice? Mm. And it was in a video meeting, and he called the players thugs, but then he claimed John Beilin. I get him in the Bulls coach Boylan confused, which I didn't want to say the wrong name. Now he claimed he thought he called them slugs. Is that in the old, like, I've said something stupid and now I need to walk it back? Do you think is that believable enough for you?
Just hearing, well, I have like personal experience with this, Doug, because there was a time when I was let me relate it to me. I think that's the most important thing here. When I was in high school, Doug, I was attending a hockey game between my beloved Hightstown Rams and the dastardly Silver Spoon touting West Windsor Pirates. Okay, and we hated these guys. They were terrible, you know, little rich, spoiled brats, et cetera, et cetera. If any of you guys are out there, by the way, I'm over this now, but that was my feeling at the time. And a chant arose among the crowd screaming, F you Pirates, except the people that were saying this were actually saying the swear word instead. And so at one point, a teacher walked by, and she looked at me and my friend, and she pointed at us, kicked us out of the game, and banned us from all attending sporting events we weren't playing in the future. So this was upsetting to me. I got put in the principal's office, and the guy asked me, well, he said, yeah, you're banned from going to these games. You're causing a ruckus. Like, it's a bad look, whatever. I said, I didn't actually say that. And he said, well, Mrs. So-and-so saw you saying. I said, how can you see someone saying something? He said, well, she could tell that you were joining the chant. I said, okay, I'm going to go outside on the other side of the glass. I'm going to say one of the two, the thing you are accusing me of saying, or let's go Hightstown, and then you'll see if you can guess me correct. I don't want to give it away too much, Doug. It's spoiler alert. He didn't bother with that exercise. He just continued to let me stay banned. He did not believe. And I said, watch how my mouth moves when I say let's go Hightstown. And I mouthed F you Pirates while saying that out loud in his office. But nah, that didn't get the job done. I remained banned for the rest of my senior year from attending sporting events. But
you know what's crazy? You know, I have I'm not gonna tell it now because if we have time at the end, if we're under like the 40-minute mark at the end, remind me. I'll tell you a story. I have almost an exact story. Did I ever tell you my story with the basketball game or no?
I don't think so.
Oh my god! Because I feel like I never heard that story for you, and I feel like you never heard this one for me. We're like an old married couple that I felt like we knew all. I felt like we knew all each other's stories, but there's a chance that you don't know this one. If we're under 40 minutes,
there is a chance because I've done this to you before. There is a chance you have heard my story, and then you incorporated it into your memory of your own life.
Well, no, because you've done that to me, and your story is now so similar. Your story is now so similar to mine, and I know mine happened because I have a paper trail for it because I got suspended from school. Okay, if we're under 40 minutes, I'll tell that story. Because now I'm wondering if you co-opted my story again, because this has happened before for you. Okay, we're gonna get. Okay. Well, you know it has. It has 100%. We've admitted this before. Okay, so we're gonna get into the four games here. Cleveland goes in and plays Detroit. Detroit 7.5-point favorites. In the big news here is that I think Blake Griffin is gonna be shut down for the season with season-ending knee surgery. Pistons are circling the drain. Almost definitely will try to trade Andre Drummond, though. It's a little unclear about what the market even for Drummond is at this point. Mm. So I'm sure they want to trade him because he's just going to be a free agent and they're going to get nothing back from him short of a sign-in trade in the offseason. Their best chance now is probably to get something for him in the trade market, although that might just be drying up. So I'm not sure what they're looking at. And they're just running a bunch of guys out here to see what they have. Oh, man, I'm going to say this name. Semi Diomboye has been starting. Sure. He's been playing a lot of minutes. Is Drummond – are we in the place now where Drummond, Sands, Blake, is it like a lock? Or has the price come up again too much? Because he's coming, again, off like another 20-20 game last game. Without Griffin, what are your thoughts here on Drummond and then any other Pistons you like?
I love Drummond. One thing to note about this game, I know you were traveling on Tuesday, but these two teams just played 2 days ago. Okay. So we know not only what they plan to do in this matchup, in this particular injury conditions, but we also know how the players, you know, scored off in the given matchups. And Drummond was unbelievable in that game. I mean, he just eviscerated Thompson down low. 23 points, 20 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 blocks, and a steal. And he was just absolutely going off. Yes, the price has come up a little bit, but I think there are actually a few different cheaper enablers today. And while you probably want to run Harden too, you know, not to give away the goat there, it's the last game, I do think Drummond, a very, very solid center option. I also think center, you know, if Kyle O'Quinn gets a start at center from Philly, then you probably play him. But if he doesn't, center is really, really thin. And I think Drummond almost becomes sort of mandatory just on the basis of there not being a lot of other good center plays.
And I said Sammy, but it's Sekou Doumbouya, who I actually picked up in my experts only league. The second Blake went down, I got him in that deep experts only league.
Did you really?
Very good about that one. He's going to throw in some stuff here and there. It's mostly going to be Drummond, but he's actually been able to score. I like Derrick Rose still at plus 30 minutes. He's even off the bench, he's essentially leading the team in shots. He took 21 shots in that game against Cleveland.
Yeah, he started the second half against Cleveland as well, and I think that's important to note. I mean, we'll get word on this before tip-off tonight, but he did start the second half for Svi. You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah,
Detroit leading the league, guys, whose names we can't pronounce. But Rose, the 30 and a half minutes, that was his highest on the season. And, you know, with Blake going down, it really looks like it could be sort of Rose's offense here going forward, if they trust him to stay healthy. So, I like Rose as well.
I think where the Pistons are at this point, Rose is such a cool story that he's been pretty damn good this season. It's such a cool story from where kind of he was and where he is now, and kind of was like, you know, sort of journeyman after being a superstar. He's just getting it done from a fantasy perspective. Sure, the Pistons are bad, but at this point, like, who really cares? And I think that if you're a Pistons, I don't even think they have a lot of, like, let's see what we have guys either, like, on the bench. And so it's like, it's Tim Frazier and guys like this, Langston Galloway. So I just don't know why at this point you wouldn't start Rose and just
Rose has a better field goal percentage than he did in his MVP season. Like, Rose is having a great season. He's just a really, really good offensive player.
Even if he didn't start, I think I'd feel very comfortable playing him in cash here. On the Cleveland side, thugs or slugs aside, we did get Kevin Love, who's, been demanding a trade, not going to get it. Probably because of the contract, and he walked himself into that situation where just signing the big money and then not being able to be traded. That's
I gotta say, his example of this, I sort of get it with like Paul George, right? Because George is like, listen, I'm awesome. You're going to be able to get an insane package for me. In the case of Love, it's like, buddy, you're probably just not a max player, right? So like, don't. Like, who? Sure, you demand a trade all you want. No one wants you.
Yeah, and like, you can't be on the court in like a game 7 with 2 minutes left to go because you can't play deep. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you'll just get like mismatched to death. Like, I don't know what he wants. Yeah. I don't really know what he wants to happen. All right, that's a good comparison.
That being said, good DFS play today. He did go off against Detroit, and I think he actually presents a lot of offensive problems for them because the guys that they're kind of running through that power forward carousel over there, none of them seem to be able to handle Love's inside-outside game, and I think he should be able to crash the boards effectively here. He scored a ton of points against Detroit. He went 39-4 against them last game, so he's just 7,200 on FanDuel. It's hard to see a path towards, you know, manning that position with two plays and one of them not being Love for me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I know Chetty Osman took a lot of shots last game. I'm not always trustful of him, but I'm probably a little more trustful of that. They did play a tighter rotation against the Pistons last time with 36 minutes for Love, 36 for Osman, 35 and 36 for Sexton and Garland each. So that's the only thing that I think you can feel a little bit better at least about the minutes because those have not always been here for the Cavs, but otherwise, this is in the end, this is two bad teams facing off. But that's why DFS is great because sometimes you can get quality play, at least fantasy plays from two bad teams. Boston goes in and plays Philly. Philly is 2-point home favorites right now, but it looks like, or it doesn't look like, Joel Embiid has already been ruled out of this game. I'm assuming that we probably play Horford in every lineup just based on the minutes that he stands to get at center. I'm not sure they start Kyle O'Quinn. The game they started O'Quinn against, I believe, was against Indy, and that was when they were facing off against like the Sabonis Turner group.
Twin Towers.
And I don't think, that's where I think they don't have to do that against Boston here. So
I don't know. Horford was awful in that game.
He's been struggling at times this season. I wonder if he's like a little bit injured as well, or just playing through something.
Well, I think the thing I read about Horford is that he just doesn't really get where he fits in on the offense, which makes total sense, right? Because Embiid does the things that Horford does offensively only better, and the other, like Harris, kind of does the other things Horford does but only better. Right. So I think he's just sort of an odd man out offensively. You can play Horford. He's very, very cheap, and just the absence of Embiid probably means Horford's going to play you know, 34 to 35 minutes and get more looks than usual, but he's not as much of a slam dunk as he would have been for me, you know, a few months ago in hearing this news.
What about the other guys like Simmons, who's, I believe his usage actually drops a little bit when Embiid's off the court. Simmons, you get Harris, his usage goes up. Guys like this, I mean, we might get a Mike Scott spot start. Other thoughts here on the Philly side?
Yeah, I think, well, you pay attention to who's starting. I think you can probably run either O'Quinn or Scott based on who gets to start here. And I think the other plays are solid. I mean, right now our system is accounting for Embiid being out and that, you know, all their usage is adjusted and it's all in place. Right now we got Harris and Horford are in our optimal lineups. That seems right to me. Small forward, another very, very thin position today. And, you know, the usage does stand to go up. Like you said, Philly's still favored by two. If this game is going to be close and they're going to score as many points as Vegas has them projected for, it's got to come from one of these guys they can create, right? So I'd be content running Philly guys today.
We don't have Simmons projected for an overwhelming total. Like, we have guys like Harden and Lillard and Westbrook, even Chris Paul, sort of like in the same Ben Simmons group. And that our projection is probably a little low, but I do want to say about Simmons, his game logs are all over the place this season. Yeah, he's got the 72-point fantasy game. There's times where he can disappear, and this game does not rate to be a very fast matchup. It has the lowest total of the night by far, 214.5 total. That's 5 points behind the Cleveland-Detroit game. It's not going to be a high-scoring game. It will be kind of grinded out. I think people will want to try to jam him in here, and maybe some of these Philly guys as well. I'm not so bullish on it, and I also get the part where Embiid isn't playing. So it'll be interesting to see. I think it'll be interesting to see just overall ownership, because the Embiid thing really, really matters, obviously. But when you take it, when you're able to like sort of mathematically account for how it matters, which I think we are, and then also look at just, you know, the matchup and all this other stuff. Yeah, I think it just doesn't become as great a play as I think people will think it is, right? Because they right now Boston's the fourth best defensive efficiency team in the league, and Embiid makes Philly worse. There's just no way, like as a team, Embiid not playing makes them, you know, fundamentally much worse of a team. So, yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I think that my guess is they'll have higher ownership than they should, and I think that we'll. If I'm really making a guess, I think we'll be on the other side of the ownership, and that's sometimes a scary proposition, and I'm not sure I'd be all that worried about it. What about running Boston guys into Philly? Kemba Walker was ejected last night. It looked like it was kind of like a ref show, him getting ejected. I don't think he should have been. He'll probably play. They don't really have any other injury news. With them getting fully healthy, you know, where do you slot this Boston team in on a short slate?
Yeah, it does take a lot of the Boston guys off the table, I believe, as he kind of rounds back into, you know, 30 to low 30s minutes. Right now, no Boston guys are showing up in our optimal lineups, and I think that's probably for good reason. I mean, you talked about Boston as a bad defensive matchup. Philly this season has allowed the fewest daily fantasy points of any team, and that's rough shape. Boston third, by the way. So, you know, you're getting two tough defenses, two teams that can really limit daily fantasy production, and with Boston guys being priced like Kemba is out and Kemba being back, that's sort of just the perfect storm of not wanting to play any of those guys.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
All right, Portland goes in and plays Minnesota. The Karl Anthony Towns thing at this point is just a complete joke. Like, the questionable tag, I know, like, the NFL polices this really well, where they say, look, if you're going to have questionable tags, when we look at the end of the season, your questionable tags, the guys have to have played in something like 60 to 70% of the games. They have a firm number on the tag, right? Like, they say, in a doubtful, it's going to be like 20%. I'm making these numbers up, but I know they look at the end of the season and they run it and say, when it's all said and done, if someone was questionable, they need to have played in some certain percentage of games, okay? And that's just—it's mostly just to keep things fair and to keep—I don't know—betting lines up and to keep fans engaged and like just as look, these are—I'm gonna go on a little thing here, but like teams are not public entities, but they're public entities. I know they're privately owned, okay? Save like the Green Bay Packers, which I think are publicly owned. I think the Celtics at one point were publicly owned, but for the most part, these are privately owned franchises, but they're really public entities. And to be this misleading about an injury tag is like is tantamount to just. Like a sports crime, I think. I know it's not a real, like, real-world crime. There's real-world problems. But Karl Anthony Towns has been questionable for, like, 2 months now. He's just not questionable. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just make him doubtful. Yeah. Like, it's
well, maybe he's questionable now, but he certainly wasn't a month ago.
It's the same mean. It's like the Nets did something similar with Kyrie. It was a little different. They labeled him out, like, for a long time, but they never gave any timetables on his return. I don't know. My Nets podcast, it drove me totally crazy, and I thought the team was really doing everyone a disservice by being just
cryptic
just like
about it.
Yeah, just like very cryptic and very just, you know, aloof, not even aloof about it, but just kind of like, you know, just be in the shadows about it, like not saying anything. The Towns thing is arguably worse because, you know, you kind of sell your fans on the fact that, oh, he's questionable, he might play. Right, like you're coming to the games and you're hoping right. to see him in layup lines. It's really they're doing such a disservice with this questionable tag. Not to mention
he's been upgraded to a game time decision.
Oh, great, so. Great, whatever. I don't even believe him. So who
we'll
cares?
See, yeah.
Like I'm just
no, I don't either. Yeah, it's a bad situation. I everything you said in the last 4 minutes, Doug, I agree with. I think Minnesota could be a lot better about this reporting. It does matter for our DFS purposes too. Like you know, if the game that he miraculously comes back, it is going to make a lot of these other. Minnesota plays worse, you know, guys that have seen significant cash game ownership recently, like Robert Covington, he's a great play. I think it's 6,000 with Towns out. If Towns were just to show up tonight, that's really going to cut into Covington's usage and potentially his minutes too. So yeah, this is a shoe that will drop at some point and make some people pretty unhappy. Curious to know your thoughts on Wiggins though. You know, he missed 4 games there. He returned. He's been very chalk the last couple games. Great matchup against Cleveland and Memphis and hasn't really gotten there in the high $6,000 to low $7,000 price point. You know, another reasonable matchup here going up against Portland. Can we play him, though? Like, I mean, it's a short slate, so maybe you just wind up having to, but are you concerned at all that he's not fully healthy still?
I'm not so much worried about the health with him. I think he's probably...
Well, it's like an illness thing, this crazy flu that's going on.
Yeah, well, he had the flu where he was out for like a week with the flu. He was out... He missed 4 games with the flu. So maybe there's some conditioning correct. Aspects. He did play 33 minutes. I think that what you're seeing from this team more than anything, one, we might be getting back into the old Andrew Wiggins is kind of going back to what Andrew Wiggins was. That could be part of the problem. And then two, the emergence of guys like Culver... Really, Culver taking more shots. Culver at the beginning of the season had like almost no usage when he was playing. And then when Wiggins left, and it was like kind of in that Nets game, and I think the game before, we saw Culver just go crazy with the amount of shots he's taking. And I wonder if that in and of itself has, because it would seem like those shots would be almost 1-to-1 in terms of their offense. Of like, you know, if he's getting, well, all shots are 1-to-1 because if you take one, other people can't. So I get that math I get. But you know, like the Culver looks probably the more he gets comfortable and wants to shoot. My guess is that directly takes away from guys like Wiggins. And if you look at last game, they had almost an equal distribution among the starters in terms of shots: 10, 13, 10, 10, 11. That was the five starters. And if we're gonna see more distribution like that, where it's not just gonna be you know 15% usage upgrade for Wiggins when Cat's off the court, I think that could stand to continue. And then you get Teague coming off the bench too. So I'd be worried about being super bullish on like another 20 shot shooting game for Wiggins with the way, at least like specifically Culver has looked more comfortable shooting.
Yeah,
right.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that probably moves Culver into cash game consideration as well. He's not a guy I even wrote up, but yeah, looking at these game logs and the shots, like. You know, with rookies, it can get tricky this way where sometimes just something new happens, right? Like a lot of DFS is understanding that there's nothing new under the sun. Like, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge is going to be LaMarcus Aldridge regardless of what he's done in the last 5 games. It's not really that way with rookies and to a lesser degree, second year guys. So yeah, we could be seeing something of an emergence there.
On the Portland side, they get CJ McCollum back, and but the guy that's really, I mean, Hassan Whiteside's been at times just murdering people. He had 16-14, 21-18, 23-21. I mean, these are his last three games in terms of points and rebounds. And the minutes have been there. I mean, that's always been his issue, right? Always the Hassan Whiteside thing has never been, you know, can he put up fantasy stats? Whatever you want to say about it, whether he makes your team better or not, that's not, for this, for our purposes here, it's not really our concern. From a fantasy perspective, for him, it's only been about, can he play the minutes very consistently? And that looks, right now, like all the world to be the case. Are we trusting him as, like, one of the most expensive just overall plays on a given slate at this point? I mean, you know, we have Harden and guys like Doncic, those guys sit in their own class. But Whiteside is, you know, sort of behind Drummond. Where do you kind of rank them together? You know, right now, Whiteside's $1,400 cheaper. Has his recent run and specifically the minutes been enough to show you that he can kind of sustain this price?
I think so. I mean, a lot of the issue with Whiteside in the minutes in the past has not really been anything that we know of his own doing. It's just been coaches not really wanting to play him that often. And I think there's some reasonable criticisms to be made, you know, like a lot of his production is on the empty calories side of things. You know, it's big flashy blocks out of bounds, but then, you know, not really doing anything when he's just lined up in the post against someone. There were some great videos early this season of guys just like shooting over him and then being like a little like freaked out. Like, did I miss a whistle? Cause this guy didn't even move a muscle as I just took a jump shot over him. And so I certainly understand why he's a tough guy to watch, but I think from, you know, for a lot of guys, we look at them and we're like, you know, listen, Colin Sexton is just as motivated every night because he's just trying to make it in this league. I do think Whiteside is a motivation guy. We know that when he is motivated, like when he first came out and had his breakout and he was just dropping those 20 rebound games, like you can tell when he's engaged. Right now he is fully engaged and I totally get it. I think the discount on him is pretty appealing, and if he goes up against Georgie Deng, like that's pretty appealing too. So yeah, I can certainly see the case for Whiteside and Cash here. I think I'd probably prefer Drummond. But man, it's close. You know, Whiteside is doing sort of Drummond-light things at a much cheaper salary. So yeah, that's a close one for me.
Yeah, I probably would lean Drummond too, but Whiteside, like at Whiteside, the fact that he's even making it close is an interesting proposition. What about Lillard here? Lillard, from a full season fantasy perspective, has been really one of the best fantasy guys available. Now, it's not a guy we've run out there a ton in cash short of injury because, you know, they put Melo out there and they always have CJ McCollum. But he still has a really high minutes floor and, you know, has paid reasonable returns. His thing with fantasy-wise over the season, he's amazingly consistent over the course of the season. Like, he plays every game, so for like a season-long thing, that's why the price ends up being sort of fair. But we haven't priced, I mean, we haven't projected for, I think, yeah, right now, at least on FanDuel, the highest projected overall point guard, even higher than Russ. Does that feel correct to you in this game, or would you be like, you know, let's say we opted to go, we're not doing this one-to-one, but if we opted to go Lillard over Westbrook at the same price on FanDuel and you saw Westbrook's ownership at higher, would that be a situation that worried you? Because sometimes I like to just sort of judge. I'm not saying we're going to do that, but I'm just trying to compare these two guys.
Yeah, so I think in that case, it's less about, you know, the sort of the absolute talent and production of those two players, because I do think, you know, by that evaluation, you'd have to give it to Russ. I mean, he's outscored Lillard on a fantasy points per game basis this season, although it's been fairly close. But where things sort of get pretty separate here is in the matchups. So, you know, Russ goes up against OKC, and the backcourt combo of Chris Paul and SGA has been absolutely phenomenal this season at preventing daily fantasy production. Like, they've been, I think, a top five team in that regard. And then you have Minnesota, who's not only banged up, but also just kind of bad. And Minnesota worse against the point guard and shooting guard position than they are against other positions too. So I think our system is going to view them as pretty attackable and pretty exploitable. And so I think that's why it's kind of leaning into Lillard a little bit there. So it's a combination of, you know, the matchup and the fact that these prices are being totally identical. And these guys, you know, Lillard and Russ are separated by basically one fantasy point on the season. And I think that's enough to shift the needle towards Lillard's favor there.
Yeah, I think I hear that. You know, Westbrook had 35 and 33 minutes, but then he can trend up to 38. So, you know, Lillard's minutes floor is very, very high. I know that I don't need to just compare these guys one-to-one all the time because that's just really not – it's interesting that they're both the same price and we have them projected for almost the same amount. I'm just trying to figure out if a push came to shove where I'd want to land. Any other quick thoughts here on Portland as they get healthier, that we can move on to the last game?
Yeah, Melo is still playable at 6,100. He's been shooting a lot. His production's really been there. Aside from that tough Miami game, he's topped 5x points per dollar in the three of the last four games. Some of those were good matchups, but, you know, going up against Toronto, not the greatest matchup. He led the team in shots and total points and hit the game-winning shot. So it's like, is there some real serious throwback Melo stuff going on right now? And I think at least offensively, he's contributing enough for Portland that he'll be out there. So I think the floor is plenty high. Small forward's tough. You can definitely play him in cash here.
All right, 9:30 game. Revenge narratives abound. Houston goes in and plays OKC. Russ, I believe this is Westbrook's first return back to Oklahoma City. And obviously the Chris Paul going the other way. Houston is 2.5-point road favorites right now against the OKC team that's been very feisty this season. They've just been good. They're 21-16. They're almost... They're not a lock to make the playoffs because anything can happen and the trade deadline could loom large for them, depending on, you know, where guys like Paul and Gallo and even maybe Adams go. And they're in a fascinating situation about what they do with this team, because right now they're 6 games up in the loss column for the playoffs against a bunch of teams that have to feel like they're just, you know, objectively just better than at this point. So, yeah, the OKC thing is completely fascinating. And then on the Rockets side, they are going to get Westbrook coming back. He sat the first end of the back-to-back. Sitting last night to let Harden just pour in just what looked like he was going to get to 100. I think he had 55 fantasy points at halftime, and then obviously, you know, like a bum, didn't get there, but was still overwhelming and complete chalk. What do you want to do with this game with Westbrook coming back? You know, do we trust the OKC guys in cash? Give me your thoughts here.
Yeah, so these two teams did meet. I think it was their third game of the season, and in that game, both Harden and Westbrook were solid on these prices, but sort of nothing to write home about. I think on a short enough slate, you're going to probably have to at least consider both of them. I think there is some value, especially with the Embiid thing happening. And I think, yeah, both of them are going to be in consideration. I think the revenge narratives for Westbrook, potentially a little overblown. Like, you would have thought that if there was like some sort of deep-seated revenge, like, because we've seen these Russ games, right, where he shoots 30 times. Like, that's totally in his wheelhouse. He only shot 16 times when these two teams squared off earlier this season. And I think it's hard enough to get buckets and looks against CP3 and Shea that it's not a lock or anything. So I think it's very close. I think probably people will lean into Westbrook because of that revenge game narrative, which just wasn't even on the forefront of my mind here.
I was kidding about that.
I know you were kidding, but our chatters won't be later. And I think a lot of people will look at this, you know, with him returning to OKC. And I think it's not outrageous to assume that, you know, that he'll potentially get, like, if there were a time for him to get extra looks, like, this would sort of be it. Right. So yeah, I think both of those big guys are playable. I don't think I would want to go down the path of many of these other plays, though. You know, PJ Tucker is just kind of a non-entity offensively. I suppose you can consider Capella. Like, he really should be out there to contend with Adams. Like, actually, both of them kind of force the other team to match them, right? So I think Adams and Capella, both sort of true centers, could be in line for mid-30s minutes here. Yeah, and those wind up being playable options, but I think as far as the headliners on Houston go, I can imagine both of them having pretty significant ownership here.
Now, right now, we have Chris Paul and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander as 100% cash game plays on FanDuel at $7,200 and $6,500, respectively. Is that something you could see, you know, maintaining here over the course of the day? This game does have a pretty high total. You know, Paul's minutes are going to sit right around 33, not really anymore unless they go to overtime. And SGA will play a lot of minutes, but he seems to be pretty scoring dependent at this point. Would you feel comfortable with running both those guys as cash plays?
Yeah, definitely. I think Houston, you know, again, it's a four-game slate, and you don't really have that many options. Houston's been very, very generous to opposing point guards and shooting guards this season from a DFS perspective. They play about league-average defense with the second fastest pace in the league. And I think that means, you know, getting these guys, CP3 and Shea, at just fair prices means that you're going to wind up sort of having to play them. They're kind of these mid-range enablers that just will fit in perfectly in cash game lineups. Like, they don't ask much of you to play them in the same way that like a Russ or Harden would. So yeah, I think I don't see that changing, I guess, is the long story short. OKC, just 3.5-point underdogs, which, again, after this trade was made, I think teams would have looked, people would have looked at this and be like, hey, these teams are going to play in January. What's the spread? Rockets heading into OKC. The fact that OKC is just 3.5-point underdogs means, yeah, everyone, and without Dat and Gallo too, means that they've all got to be feeling pretty good here. So yeah, I love the Thunder guys here.
All right, we're going to get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site, DFSR.com. For short, head on over, grab a free trial of a projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NBA. Also cover you through the rest of NFL, NHL, baseball when it comes around. It's all covered under one subscription package, so go check that out. DFSR.com/deals. Buddy, enjoy your Thursday night.
Peace.